Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. If you listened or watched much of the House impeachment proceedings last week, you might have felt like you were witnessing dual realities. So different was the questioning of the witnesses by committee members. For partisans, and polling bears this out, the needle didn't move much. Your personal feeling about President Trump determined your reaction. But what of Americans who are only paying attention peripherally? What do they make of these dueling realities? Well, my guest today warns of a reality fatigue from constantly having to separate fact from fiction and truth from propaganda. Psychiatrist Robert J. Lifton has spent much of his career studying the effects of psychological extremism, the consequences when political leaders to cult gurus try to control fact narratives and their own reality. He's researched Nazi doctors, totalitarian regimes, survivors of mass killing events, and those involved with cults, and how easy it is to lose our grip on truth in the face of what he calls malignant normality. Lifton is a National Book Award-winning writer and educator who's taught at Harvard, Yale, and at age 93 still lectures at Columbia University. He's one of 27 psychiatrists, psychologists, and mental health professionals who contributed to the controversial book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. And his latest book is titled Losing Reality, on Cults, Cultism, and the Mindset of Political and Religious Zealotry. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Robert J. Lifton, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Happy to be with you.
In your new book, Losing Reality, which draws on writings from throughout your career, you argue that the psychological relationship between extremist political movements and religious cults are much closer than we thought. I'm assuming traditionally we have thought adherents come to those set of political beliefs or religious beliefs from different places?
Yes, I think in the past we've tended to think of them as rather separate and even unrelated. But it turns out that that's not the case at all. And I was struck by an experience I had during the 1970s in which young people struggling with extremist American religious cults in this country picked up on a chapter of my earlier book on Chinese thought reform, the infamous Chapter 22, and they, in a sense, embraced it almost like an underground document because they found in my description of what I call the ideological totalism of Chinese communist thought reform, they experienced reverberations for what they had been through in these fanatical cults. And here were, you know, people in a very different place, in a very different setting, with a religious motif, finding close parallels to a faraway process by a different group on a political basis with a political idiom. And that was strong evidence of the parallels between these political and religious tendencies toward zealotry, which I came to call cultism.
Oh. Now, that ideological totalism you're talking about is Maoism, basically. Is that what you were referring to at the time?
Well, yes, that's right. Maoism is perhaps the most vivid example of it because it comes with a systematic program of what the Chinese call thought reform, the term that I used. It's often referred to as brainwashing, but that's a looser term whose meaning is not always clear. And that epitomizes ideological totalism. And it's generally seen to be in a political context, but it's not so different from religious themes or religious tendencies that one finds in these cults.
Of course, in Losing Reality, though, you're relating your work on cults of personality and religious cults to the reality of today, and that's the presidency of Donald J. Trump. You refer to it as a solipsistic reality. I had to go look up what solipsistic is. What do you mean by that?
Well, let me first say that at first glance, Trump would seem to be totally unrelated to the totalistic tendencies, say, in Chinese communism or in cults like the Japanese fanatical cult Aum Shinrikyo that I studied. But what he shares with them is the effort to own reality, to own reality as though it belonged to him. And that's where the solipsistic tendency comes in. Solipsistic really means self-reference. With Trump, everything he says or comes to believe has to do with the self, its own experience, its own needs, its own actions. And he can, in that way, ignore or dismiss larger tendencies that are shared by others in their understanding of reality. Or he can also ignore traditional standards for evidence. So this is what I call his solipsistic or self-determined reality. And that's really crucial, because once that is present in an important elected official, especially the President of the United States, it can have disastrous reverberations as he tries to promote and press on others this solipsistic or self-referenced reality.
And of course, you refer to him as the antithesis of this ideological totalism, which, you know, that means this sort of view of a single reality and truth that is, in the case of a state, it's the state's version of reality and truth. You said he's actually the antithesis because his views and pronouncements can change 180 degrees on a dime with no acknowledgement of prior viewpoints, and almost like that previous opinion didn't even exist.
Yes, exactly. So he would seem to be, and is, very different. I mean, ideological totalism sets forth an ideology that covers all of one's existence, one's beliefs, one's criteria for morality, good or bad, what one does during the day, in the morning, and noon, in the evening. Trump's lack of an ideology of any consistent beliefs would seem to be the very opposite of that. And yet it comes together with ideological totalism in this common feature of seeking to own reality, that is to set the standards for reality, which everyone else has to follow. And in that way, there is a close resemblance.
Of course, one of the great interesting issues of our time is usually the American body politic would completely shy away from somebody whose pronouncements can be one view today, completely opposite the next day, with no acknowledgement of an evolution. And usually we shy away from a candidate that will talk about an evolution. We want people who have very well-set political beliefs. What's behind that?
Well, I recently, even after the book, wrote a short op-ed in which I talk of the American reality disorder. Partly through Trump and partly through other forces, there has been a breakout and a rejection, at least in part, of ordinary standards for what is true and what is false. I speak of reality as having two levels, and this I talk about in the book. One is the general abstract reality, which is part of a society and its leading voices, and such reality has to do with whether democracy is the best form of government or not, or whether a God exists or not, or so on. But then there is also the more nitty-gritty factual reality, immediate reality. I'm an American psychiatrist talking to you on a telephone now in connection with a radio broadcast having to do with a book of mine called Losing Reality. That's the nitty-gritty truth of factual reality. And in the case of Trump and many others among the Republicans who follow him, they're willing to backslide or give up on the factual reality of things because they see a larger truth in the narrative that he presents. That is a narrative of a rebel who's against the existing leaders of society, who's tough, and who represents the views of people who feel themselves left out and who attack the elite, so that they can form a narrative about him or about such people that is truer than truth, which can absorb and take in and either accept or ignore these falsehoods. why that has increased in America. I think that, you know, that kind of situation has always existed. It's not completely new, but it's usually been at the fringes in the past. And now, with the Trump presidency, it's at the heart of society. And he's attempting to govern, insofar as he does govern, through falsehood and conspiracism.
And there's a bit of an apocalyptic element to that set of beliefs that you're talking about. And you write in numerous cases throughout history and versions of cults and political movements you've studied, where there's that sort of renewal spirit. By breaking down the old order, we'll see a new order blossom. Is that at the heart of that thought, too?
Yes. Well, the apocalyptic narrative, the idea of the world being destroyed in order to be reconstructed with greater spiritual purity, yes, that's the apocalyptic narrative which has been with us since the beginning of time. In Trump's case, there's a version of it. He doesn't take an overtly apocalyptic stance or put forward a clear apocalyptic reality, but he does say, only I understand society, only I can fix it. And he describes himself as a genius, as someone who's omniscient, so in that sense, gives himself a sense of total control over the world and its process. And many apocalyptic people in the various cultish expressions around him embrace him and are more direct in their apocalyptic expressions. Now, these apocalyptic expressions, of course, occur in the cultist groups other than Trump, so that you find them in cults like Aum Shinrikyo, which released sarin gas into the Tokyo subway stations in 1995. But you also find them in political movements, so that Mao Tse-tung could write, if a nuclear war is started by the imperialists, there will emerge from the destruction a society of communism more beautiful than any that has previously existed. This is an apocalyptic narrative in political Maoist terms. So political groups, in ways we don't usually think of, can share this kind of apocalyptic narrative.
And in the rhetoric of President Trump, it tends to manifest itself in things like drain the swamp, dismantle the deep state?
Yes, well, dismantle the deep state, and he's had a lot of help from Steve Bannon on that idea, is to destroy existing institutions in the service of creating new ones that are finer, more pure, and better. And of course, they're the kind that Trump and group around him can control.
My guest today is Robert J. Lifton, a psychiatrist, author, and educator. He's the author of numerous books, including Death and Life, The Survivors of Hiroshima, The Nazi Doctors, Medical Killing, and the Psychology of Genocide. His most recent book is titled Losing Reality on Cults, Cultism, and the Mindset of Political and Religious Zealotry. It's published by the New Press, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, we've just come through a week with the impeachment hearings where, according to at least to one observer, Eugene Robinson of the Washington Post, he writes that he felt he was witnessing a political party become a cult of personality in defending President Trump in the House Intelligence Committee. It wasn't a body weighing evidence, but a body shouting down witness after witness, throwing out political conspiracy theories, as opposed to confronting the evidence that was put in front of them. What's your reaction to that thought?
I agree with that, and I would put it this way. What we've seen in the past few days has been very moving, despite the effort of Republicans in opposition to deny factual evidence of violation of the Constitution and facts in general. What's moving about it is the action I call that of witnessing professionals. Here are professionals from the State Department or the National Security Agency or other groups who bear witness to what I call the malignant normality of the Trump regime. Trump has attempted to create standards of lying and falsehood and of various forms of transgressive behavior as what we can expect in everyday life from an administration and in a society. And these professionals who do their job impartially bear witness to the malignancy of this claim of normality. In that case, I call this malignant normality and witnessing professionals. And I've seen it in other areas, such as nuclear weapons or climate threat. But here we see it in the State Department and other agencies of government. And there's a deep feeling of satisfaction that many of us have in watching the process, because it's a return to reason, to reality as we know it, as opposed to the falsehood and conspiracism that has so dominated the Trump administration.
You know, but I have to say, when you watch the opposition, the Republican opposition in that committee, it's not about weighing evidence or even looking at the evidence and saying this doesn't rise to the huge level of impeachment. You know, I could possibly justify that. There's no weighing of evidence at all. It's accuse the accusers. It's obstruct or sort of deflect attention to something off to the side.
It's just all that. And yeah. In that sense, the Republicans have given themselves over to this kind of, call it malignant normality that Trump has foisted on the society, a malignant normality that doesn't respect factual, immediate expressions of reality. And it's assumed that this is the way things will be forever. I'm not so sure, because it's now an active dynamic, and it will change, and there will be explosive elements that we cannot exactly foresee. But as for now, yes, there is a kind of covering over and dismissal of reality in the service of a, call it a political position, but it's really a false position that denies true transgressions that are impeachable. And that has to do with the extent to which many Republicans, the party itself, the Republican group, they've given themselves over to Trump's version of solipsistic reality.
You talked right in the book as well as about this idea of malignant normality, the idea that the standards are changing and will change irrevocably for the future. Is that a fear for you?
Of course. I came upon the term or the concept of malignant normality through studying the Nazi doctors. Mm-hmm. A doctor at the ramp in Auschwitz was expected to select Jews for the gas chamber. That was what he was supposed to do. It was the normality of his job and his situation at that time. And of course, there were other malignant themes of normality in Nazi Germany. But doesn't mean that malignant normality is limited to Nazi Germany. In relatively less malignant but still deeply disturbing ways, in the United States and in the Trump administration in particular, there is a malignant normality that is imposed on us that has to do with lies and falsehood, and has to do with a kind of version of a strong man who can have his will and issue orders as the only form of governance, and other elements that are equally malignant. So I apply this idea of malignant normality to what has been going on in this country, and I've been I've connected myself and my ideas with what I call witnessing professionals who expose this malignant normality, who use their profession not as neutral people, but as observers and, yes, witnesses to what is malignant, but is claimed to be the ordinary and the necessity and the normality of society. That happens in a lot of areas, and we're seeing it dramatically and in ways that I think have consequence in relation to the hearings that we've had over the last few days. And so I think we can be a little hopeful because this kind of witnessing professional points to and defends our existing institutions, the very important ones that have to do with legislation, legality, and yes, the executive function and its restrictions. They are defending institutions that the Trumpists are seeking to undermine, and that is crucial to preserving our democracy.
You know, I'm sure you've heard this a lot, but a lot of defenders of President Trump will say that he is, he will, yes, mislead, distract, and deceive others into responding to the distractions as opposed to a policy he's trying to do to help all of Americans. How do you respond to that? Because, I mean, it's, you know, you hear this crazy as a fox sort of defense of the president.
All such leaders who seek to be strong men or who lead larger political movements speak of revitalization, his theme, make America great again, feel strong again. And that theme can have resonance, as you're suggesting, for many people. But it's also true that feelings and attitudes toward Trump are changing. There's a recognition on the part of people other than his narrow base that he's done wrong, that he's not honorable, and that he has done things that violate constitutional requirements, so-called high crimes and misdemeanors, which are, of course, at the heart of the impeachment movement. And what I would add is that the impeachment hearings themselves help overcome, or at least question, the overall reality disorder of American society that he and others have helped to impose. As the impeachment proceeds, we find people running it from the House of Representatives, going over factual evidence, proof of behavior, sometimes documents, testimony on the part of different people that confirms events. And we feel the excitement of a return to reality in situations that we've become almost used to, the violation of reality, of immediate factual reality. So the very process of impeachment, in addition to attempt to remove a president who has violated constitutional requirements from office, can also serve a function of ameliorating in some degree the national reality disorder that we've become part of.
You write in the book, though, you're also worried that Americans could be entering a phase of reality fatigue. And really, when you describe the impeachment hearings that took place this past week, there's one view of it. There's also this other view where you hear two diametrically opposed views of reality. And it's easy to go to that place of reality fatigue, of just turning off rather than trying to discern fact.
Yes, it's a very mixed process, and nothing is completely smooth about it. And there is the phenomenon of reality fatigue. I'm tired of worrying about reality one way or the other. And there are absolutely contesting narratives in seeking to claim reality about the hearings and about everything else. And to the extent that we succeed in removing Trump from office, whatever way that is done, the whole process will be imperfect, and it won't be a simple cure of all of our reality struggles. But it can be, at the very least, a movement toward actual reality and toward recognizing in truth what Trump has done. I talk toward the end of my book of Václav Havel and the so-called Velvet Revolutions in the late 1980s and 1990s, in which Havel said, if falsehood is the means by which the suppressive forces control society, then living in truth is a way to overcome that. I think that with all their failings and all the confusions, the impeachment hearings and other efforts on the part of witnessing professionals take us closer to truth and closer to contesting in more effective ways this series of transgressions that I've been describing and relating to the Trump administration.
I want to take it back just a moment to the larger narrative that has driven a lot of support for the president, and that's the Make America Great Again narrative that Trump has been pushing since he announced for office. The idea that America was great, it lost something, he can get that greatness back. That's a real old narrative in American politics, and it has always had a certain portion of the population that was attracted to that narrative. I mean, you can go back to Huey Long, you can go back to politicians age old.
It's a consistent narrative for various extreme groups, political and sometimes religious. And for the most part in American history, it has been in the wings and at the outside of not in the center of American life. Right now, with the Trump administration, it is at its very center. And yes, it can appeal, as it has, to many. But I don't think we should be beholden to a myth of absolute loyalty of the Trump base. There may be some at the very center who will not be moved by anything ever. But it's also true, as I've found, that with cultic tendencies, and Trump has them, you can see them in the chants and in the back and forth process with his people at large rallies, there occurs in such situations a kind of revulsion, so that with Aum Shinrikyo, an extremist cult, when the guru was, so to speak, de-guruized, imprisoned as a criminal, no longer a guru, and seen as a criminal, former disciples who had been absolute in their loyalty to him denounced him as a false guru and as an evil man. It's not impossible that some of Trump's disciples who have given themselves to him completely, as they recognize that he can no longer fully satisfy them, that he no longer has the magic or charisma to hold their attraction, that they can turn on him. And there have been little inklings of that or threats of that, although it hasn't occurred on any large scale. And that represents a danger to the Trump movement, which faces a lot of dangers of its own.
The name of the book is Losing Reality. Robert Lifton, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Psychiatrist, author, and educator Robert J. Lifton speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His latest book is titled Losing Reality on Cults, Cultism, and the Mindset of Political and Religious Zealotry. It's published by the New Press. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.